Hey, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Rick. Good to be here. A little nervous. This retreat means a lot to me. Steve, asked me to share on adapting to change, staying in the middle, keeping your enthusiasm for AA, and acceptance with life on life's terms, which is kind of what Mike just mentioned there. You know, I got to Florida, and this time, right? Let me back up a little bit. I got sober January 8th, 1990. I got sober in Florida. I've lived in a multitude of different states. I've been back and forth out of here a couple different times. I've been back for about almost 8 years now. I found this group of people. I found starting coming to these retreats, and I have a lot of respect for the men in this room. So, that said, bear with me here, right? Because I'm not used to doing this type of thing. I can get up here and I can share my story. I can tell you all about me. That's my favorite subject, you know? But to try and carry a message that you guys will be able to digest, take back, and discuss in your small groups is a little something new to me. Right. One of the things we talked about in our small group last night was one of my character defects is procrastination, because I work best under pressure. It's probably why I have the job that I do today. So you may have noticed I was out there in between the last session and lunch and crafting my notes to speak. And then Eric did notice, and he goes, "Oh, it's procrastination." So yes. All right, let me start at the beginning here, right? I want to talk about staying in the middle. I want to talk about keeping your enthusiasm. And I want to talk about acceptance with life on life's terms, right? When I got here, I'd blown my life up, right? Let's just leave it at that, right? I'm a product of South Florida. I grew up here. I got thrown out of the Broward County school system. I went to work at 17 as an iron worker. And I learned how to drink with the big boys. You know, I'll tell you one real quick short story about like how I qualify to be here. I went to work at 17 for this guy as an iron worker. At 21, I'm running a crew of iron workers. We're over in the Bahamas. We're in Freeport. We're there for 9 months. We're doing a retrofit on a big concrete plant there. Three meals a day paid for. Car paid for that we've shipped over for ourselves. Gas for the car paid for. Hotel paid for. At the end of 9 months, I had to borrow $5 from my boss to pay the departure tax to get out of the country. Because back then, when you got to the airport, you actually had to hand over a $5 bill to the customs agent from the Bahamas to leave. And I had to turn around and say, "Hey, I need some money." Because I'd gone out and spent all I had that previous evening. So, you know, if you can live completely free for 9 months and make good money while hanging iron out of country, you can see I might have had a problem that I came home with the nada. So I qualify to be here. Fast forward, long story short, I am now working in a pizza parlor as a journeyman iron worker. And life was good, man. And I got here and I met this little girlie and we went to a Christmas party and I said, "Hey," I says, "you know, can I get you a drink?" She's like, "No." And she says, I said, "Do you want to go smoke a joint?" She says, "No." And I says, "You want to go do a line?" Says, "No." And I said, "Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You don't drink, you don't smoke, and you don't snort." She went, "No." I went, "Wow, I need to marry a girl like you." You know, fast forward about a month. We're still kind of hanging out together, doing our thing. We go out one night. I drop her back off at her house at like 11:30 or whatever. Supposed to pick her up the next morning to go to the beach, which I do. But when I had dropped her off at 11:30, like normal people would go home, right? I went to the bottle club. And I went to Michelle's off Commercial in Dixie, if any of you remember that. And this place opened at like 2 in the morning and closed like whenever they decided there weren't enough people there to stay open for. And that's when they kicked you out. And I left that morning at 7 and drove down the street to pick her up to go out to the beach. So we did that. We got back that afternoon, and she was like, yeah, I can't do this. You know, you drink way too much, you know, and I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went, yeah, I know that. She goes, how do you know I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I was like, well, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you don't snort. I said, you get the 12 promises of AA in your refrigerator. I says, and I think I need to go to a meeting. And I did. And that's how I got here. I walked in, I picked up one white chip, and it's the only one I've ever had. And that's got less to do with me and more to do with God and some of the actions that I decided to take, that have kept me here. And I think that's why Steve asked me to talk about the subject matter that I have today. The first meeting I went to was at the fifth chapter, which was off of Dixie and Commercial, just kind of kitty corner to Michelle's. And I had seen that place for years. I thought it was a biker bar. There was always Harleys out front, and it was called the fifth chapter, and that was it. I was like, okay, some chapter, some club. And they had a coffee bar in there. So I walk in there for my first meeting, and Becky's behind the bar. She's, oh my God, Rick, how you doing? We've been waiting for you. Because she used to be the barmaid at the circus bar off of McNabb Road that I frequented for the entire 4 years that I worked for that guy as an iron worker and then some. And so I was seeing her quite frequently, you know, 5 to 7 nights a week. And there she was. You know, that's one of the first God incidences in my life is that immediately the first place I walk into and the barmaid at the coffee bar is my old barmaid from the bar. You know, I went the next day to the 101 club, right? Starting on my journey of 90 and 90. It's like somehow I got convinced that I should do that. You know, let me back up 1 second. I'll tell you a funny story. So first day, fifth chapter, first meeting, I sit down. The guy says, he says, will you read this? I said, sure. And he hands me how it works. So I'm sitting there and I've got a cup of coffee and they start the meeting. He says, Rick's going to read how it works. And I went, yeah, it's okay. I already did. He's like, no, out loud. You know, he's like, oops. So anyway, next day I'm at the fifth chapter. Now I know how this thing works, right? You read how it works first. And they don't mean to yourself. You know, it's like alone, we don't do shit. knowledge and information will avail me nothing if I don't put it into practical use. So, you know, I go to the 101 club, and there's Tommy and Bill Bibby, right? And Danny, three guys from the hood. I hadn't seen her in a while. One guy I went to middle school and high school with for a little bit. And so immediately I got like a host of friends, right? Oh yeah, come on, hang out, da-da-da-da-da. You know, and we go to do the meetings after the meetings, which is where the real sobriety happens, right? Hanging out with guys after the meeting, discussing what the meeting was about, talking about what you're gonna do and how we stay sober and live life on life's terms. And that's what I did. I jumped right in, right? I got a group of friends and I started going to the fifth chapter and I started going to the 101 club. And I started spending a lot of time on that Denny's off of Dixie and Commercial Boulevard. You know, early on, there was an old timer. And as a matter of fact, he just passed away. One Shot Bob. I don't know if any of you know him. He used to say that there are no big shots in AA. One shot and we're all shot. You know? And he was kind of influential. He was one of those old timers there that explained to me that there is a step before the steps. It's in the book. It's right there inside of how it works. Doesn't have a number on it. but it's the step before the steps. And it says that if you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And not a moment before. And they asked me, are you ready to go to any length to get this? You know, because otherwise you're wasting my time and yours. Go drink. And I said, no, I'm ready. I'm ready. And they said, okay. And then they reminded me that following that little blurb before the steps, it also tells us that half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. So that was my kind of introduction into the program. And I don't know why, you know, it was against anything I'd ever done, right? But I was hurting. I was, you know, we used to talk about, you know, getting all screwed up at night and drinking and drugging and being toe up from the floor up. And I was tore up from the floor up inside and I couldn't do any more. You know, I couldn't fill that hole, no matter how much I drank and how much I drugged. And so I started doing the deal. I started going to meetings. I started going to Denny's. I started making friendships. I started hanging out. I started feeling a lot better. I realized that a journeyman iron worker really shouldn't be flipping pizzas, you know, because that's what I was doing. About, I don't know, 60 or so days in, against all better judgment and any recommendations to the contrary, I found out about a job that was going on in International Falls, Minnesota, and I left South Florida with less than 90 days of sobriety, and I went to International Falls, Minnesota, which is on the Canadian border, as far away from here as you can get. I got on an airplane, and it was 85 degrees. I got off that airplane, and it was minus 50 with the wind chill. And 135 degree temperature change in the wrong freaking direction. And the next day I was going to, a job site to take a piss test and go work out in outside in that stuff, you know? And that's where some more of these God incidences started happening. I got to International Falls, Minnesota. This is a town of 8,000 people that had 2,500 construction workers working on this paper mill. So needless to say, they had a big man camp and real estate was at a prime price out there. They were throwing moms and babies out of these apartments and what available housing there was so that they could rent it at five times the rent to us iron workers and painters and electricians and concrete guys. And there were 2,500 people working on this job site at one time. And the first thing that happened to me when I got into town is I went to the Alano Club. And I went to the Alano Club and I went to a meeting and I met some people and I told them I was in town. And this guy was like, oh, cool. Do you need a place to live? And I was like, yeah, you know? And so he rented me the entire bottom. He had a duplex house, right? So two bedroom, two bath house on top, two bedroom house on the bottom. Rented the entire bottom floor. This used to be his kids, and they'd long moved out. Like $300-$400 a month. I don't even remember what it was. I know it was ridiculous. I know that back, this is 1990. So these people were paying in International Falls, Minnesota, they were paying like $1,800, $2,000 a month for a one bedroom apartment. You know, cause they were raping us as construction workers when, if you wanted to get out of the man camp, you know, and, just another God incident working in my life because I'm part of this fellowship. My first day there before I met this guy, I'm sitting at the, I rented a place at, the Rainy Lake Lodge. And if any of you know Charlie, all right, Charlie has his houseboats and that's where he runs his houseboats out of, is the Rainy Lake Lodge right there in Rainy Lake, Minnesota, which is where we were. So I'm sitting there and I'm at the bar restaurant and I just gone and taken my piss test And the guy comes in, sits down, and he orders a Coke. It's like, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and nobody's back from the job yet. And I said, wow. He said, you don't drink? He says, no, I don't drink. I said, really? So you a friend of Bill's? He said, why, yes, I am. So I'm not in town 24 hours, and I found somebody in the program. Right? Tell me God isn't working in my life already. I'm less than 90 days sober. I'm on the other end of the country, right? And this happens, right? Then I go to the Ilano Club and I meet this guy and I get a house to rent. I'm on the job site. I got a connecting partner. We're working up on this bleach tower. We're like 100 feet in the air. And I guess this guy really wasn't the iron worker he said he was, because he got up there and he had to walk to the first piece of iron we go to disconnect, and he has to go walk out across the beam to go unhook the crane, and he just locks up. And we've got these big spreader bars that come down, and so I got to go undo his end, but in order to undo his end, I got to undo my end first, right? So the crane can come down so we can. And so I'm like, hey, like, dude, like, when I let go of this, it's coming at you, you know? So like, either get the fuck out of the way or stop it from hitting you. And he missed, and it caught him in the leg, and we had to put him in a man basket, right? So now we got to disconnect the crane. We got to go get a safety man basket. We got to throw him in the man basket. And then he spent the rest of his time in the trailer putting bolts together, you know, so that they didn't have any lost time accidents on the job. I guess, you know, with his knee just all blown to shit. And they give me a new connecting partner the next day. And I'm like, okay, great. This is working out great. You know, I get this new connecting partner. We're working on that same piece of the building. And this was a non-union job in a union state. And the, fabricators were union, and everybody else on the job site was non-union. And the iron workers were non-union, and the union had a fault tolerance built into their work, which was very generous. And so a lot of the times the holes didn't line up. A lot of the times the pieces were too long or too short. And you know, we used to wear shirts that said, put it up, take it down. It all pays the same. So like, egos, right? But anyway, so this kid, he's brand new with me, and he's trying to put it together. And he's like, oh, God, grant me the serenity. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Oh, well, are you afraid of Bill's? He's like, yes, I am. I'm like, holy shit. All right? I've been in town less than a week, right? And I've got a guy I met in the hotel I'm at. I got a guy I met at the Ilano Club. And I got a connecting partner all in the program. I mean, God is working in my life, doing for me what I can't do for myself. And I'm just like agog with what's going on. And we started going to meetings together. We'd hang out in the daytime. We'd hang out in the night. We'd go to meetings, you know. We started a meeting we went to the hospital, and this guy was more NA than AA, and there were no NA meetings at all. So we went to the local rehab hospital and asked them if we could start a meeting. And they said, oh, please, right? You know, there's no NA here. You want to start an NA meeting? Yes. Here's a room. We'll make coffee, you know, and the whole deal. So I still don't even have 90 days, right? And we're starting an NA meeting in International Falls, Minnesota, right? You know, and you know, my brother Ed isn't here. I guess he went to go do deep breathing with Stevie. So anyway, you know, unlike Ed, and I don't mean to throw any shade, right? I'm just saying that unlike Ed, you know, who said he didn't get involved and do any service for 3 years, no sponsorship, no steps, that wasn't my path, right? I came in and I jumped in and I just started to do this deal, right? And I have for 35 years. You know, Stevie B talked about that change will shape and define our future, you know, for these groups of men that we need and work with. And it has, you know, that change that I took from being a unemployable iron worker flipping pizzas and got into the program and started doing the deal enabled me to start carrying the message early, you know. Now realize that, but I kind of sort of did like 1, 2, and 3 at this point, but I'm still just like, start a meeting? Sure, let's do it, you know. And then we, you know, that job finished up. I didn't burn any bridges, you know. I got let go when they did the ROF, right, reduction of force. I didn't get fired, which was like my previous career. I ran out of places in South Florida to work that hung iron, which is why I was looking for a job in International Falls, Minnesota, because nobody in Florida would hire me. You know, and then I ended up out in Colorado. I was going to go to the East Coast, the West Coast. I was a boomer at one point, so I knew where all like the big jobs were that you could travel to. And ended up in Colorado. And so I get to work, with this company, and they put us up in the mountains, and I'm working in Vail, and I'm working in Beaver Creek, and, you know, we're doing a couple weeks. And then come home for a weekend, and then we go back up for a couple of weeks, and then we come home for a weekend, and then we end up in Telluride, and we're in Telluride, and we're building the Telluride Mountain Village, and we're doing like 3 weeks because it's a long way from Denver to Telluride. It's like an 8-9 hour drive, and so we're doing 3 weeks. We do 3 weeks on, come back for like 4 days, go back, do another 3 weeks, and we're working 7 days a week, right? And there are no meetings in Telluride. None, right? Still 1990. So I'm still in my first year. I've already been sober in 3 states. I tell them, look, I got to go. You guys get work in Phoenix. I says, either you can send me to Phoenix or I'm going to quit. And here's my notice. So make up your mind. 2 weeks come, I start packing up the truck, start getting ready to go. What are you doing? Where are you going? So I told you, I'm going to go back and I'm going to work in Denver, or you send me to Phoenix. And they're like, well, if you're going to be that way, you can go to Phoenix. So I load up the truck off to, not Beverly Hills, but Phoenix I go. And I get to Phoenix. And one of the things that I had learned along the way from Florida to Minnesota to Colorado was that you need to stick your hand out when you're new, when you're old. When you show up somewhere and you're the new guy, regardless of why you're the new guy, you need to stick your hand out. And so I did. And I found a group of people and I found a meeting, right? And I got involved. And I was in Phoenix for almost 4 years. I spent 3 years of that time. I hosted a Saturday night speaker meeting, much like they do at the 12-step house. Hosted that meeting every Saturday night for 3 years or so. And it was a big meeting. We had, you know, like 100 people show up every week. You know, we started a softball league, me and a couple other guys. And we worked with the Sallies. And we started a couple of clubs, a couple of Sally operations, and we had a sober softball league. We did roundups. We went to Flagstaff. We went to Sedona. And we did big events, and we did it as groups, you know. The guy that was the best man at my wedding, Charlie, we called him Miracle Charlie. Charlie came in, and at this point, I've got just about a year, a couple of months. And Charlie came in and he sat in front of me and he sat there every day for 30 days. And then me and my girlfriend are at home. We're watching the news And Charlie's on the news and they're interviewing him going, oh, what do you think about this? This apartment building had blown up in downtown Phoenix. And the reason that apartment building blown up is because he had offered to help some guy that was a friend of his that was one of us. And that guy decided to off himself while Charlie was at work. So he pulled out the stove, disconnected the gas, sat back, waited a little while, lit a cigarette. Charlie had to identify him by his boots, right? And he comes walking out, and the cop says, oh, my God. He says, man, he says, what a day you've been through. Charlie's got nothing. I mean, it took out like 15 apartments. Like, it blew the shit out of that building. And he says, man, he says, you should, yeah, if I was you, I'd just go across the street and go have a drink. And Charlie said, I had permission. Cop told me to go drink. And just then, the Red Cross van pulls up. And Kathy gets out of the Red Cross van. Kathy had been sitting next to Charlie in front of me for the last 30 days. She says, Charlie, you're going to be okay. You come with me. Let's go to the meeting. We'll get you a place to live. We'll get you some clothes. And Charlie came to the meeting and he stayed sober until he died. And Charlie is a miracle of this program because he would have told you that he had permission to go drink. Cop told him, go across the street to the bar, man. You need a drink, right? And Kathy showed up. And that's another one of those God instances. Later, Charlie, he had a stroke. And he spent 2 years in a rehab. 2 years. And he had to learn how to talk again. And he had to learn how to walk again. And he did. And then he drove his ass all the way down, because I was now at that point in time here in Florida, and he drove his ass all the way down here from Phoenix to visit us. And then later on, Charlie had another stroke, and he survived that one too. And he was a founding member of that group that I told you to go to out in Phoenix, Paul, right? That we helped start a meeting in Phoenix that I never got to go to the first official meeting of the place because, as Steve will tell you, I'll move on a whim, right? Give me an offer of a job, something I want to go do. Give me some more money, and boom, I'm gone, right? And I can show up, and I learned how to stick my hand out and stay involved and make friends in this meeting wherever I am, because this is my people. This is where I need to be. You know, so from there, like I said, Charlie came. Obviously, we'd moved to Florida, right? We came down here. You know, I did the deal. My kid, you know, at this time I'm now married. My son, we had his baby shower at Club 24 off of Commercial and Pine Island, because it had moved at that time from where it was on University and in between 44th and Commercial. So I had my kid's baby shower in one of these rooms with my wife. You know, I went through back surgery, didn't work for like 3 years while I was down here after my son was born. And no matter what, I just kept doing the deal. I kept going to meetings. I spent 9 months in a clamshell, you know, full body cast. And I'd just stand in the corner because I needed to go to meetings. You know, and then my kid was two, my wife's grandparents died, and she was missing her family, so we moved back to Colorado, where I spent the next 17 years. What time am I supposed to be done? 4:30? 4:15? Okay. So, you know, we moved out to Colorado, we spent 17 years out there, right? And so I did the same thing. I put my hand out. I started getting involved. You know, Stevie, when he was sharing yesterday, you know, and said that the enemy of sobriety is thinking that we don't need to do the things we did to get sober. And he was right. You know, that stinking thinking, I don't need to go to a meeting, right? That, you know, I'll go next week, or I don't need to get involved, or I don't need to do service. That is the enemy of your sobriety. It's thinking that we don't need to do the things that we did early to stay sober. And I think you nailed that on the head. You know, you hear about people relapsing after multiple years in the program. You know, and they don't always get back. They don't always get back. We had our small group, this morning, I think it was. I love these things. They just, it's just the whole weekend is a blur of just sobriety and recovery. But, you know, you don't always get back when you go out. The door swings both ways, but you're blessed and lucky if you get it coming back in. You know, Tony, John, Stevie, you know, they all talked about being able to come back and being blessed to do that. Most don't. I've seriously lost track. I can't count the number of funerals and people that I have watched come into this program and die because they were too smart or think that they didn't need to do this any longer. You know, and why me? Why am I still here? You know, why didn't they get it? Why didn't they get what I got? You know, I don't have an answer for that. I do know what's worked for me and what continues to work for me on a daily basis is staying connected. You know, because no one is immune. You know, this disease is out there to kill us. And, you know, to quote Miguel, I woke up with untreated alcoholism this morning and I know the cure and I got to do the thing that I did the day before and the day before and the day before that kept me sober. You know, I got a guy that I know from Colorado. His name is John Darcy. And he breaks his anonymity all the time because he's still alive and he wouldn't care if I did. I also talked to him recently because my wife celebrated 37 years of sobriety a couple days ago and he posted, I got 40 days in response to her post. Problem with that is that John Darcy was a circuit speaker in the Pacific Northwest in Western states and lived in Colorado and would go to California and go to Washington and Seattle and he would go and he would share his story. And apparently, he forgot how he got this 27 years and all the messages that he delivered like this one. They were all for naught because he decided to go and pick up. So, you know, no matter what you're doing, you're not immune if you're not doing the same things that got you sober when you got here. You know, if you stop doing this thing, you stop doing this thing. It's like me and my back surgeries. I always tell my wife, you know what happens when you stop moving? Stop moving. And I'm not going to stop moving. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to get up. I'm going to go. I'm going to go scuba diving. I'm going to go running. I'm going to go fishing. I'm going to go out on the boat. I'm going to keep moving. And that in my life is how I got to do this thing. Because if I don't do what I did, I ain't going to get what I got. And I like what I have. I want to keep it. So we're out in Colorado, 17 years. We moved to Washington, right? New job, more money. Life is good. You know how those new jobs and more money and stuff keeps happening? Because of all the stuff I learned in here, you know? I learned how to apply myself. I learned how to be a nice human. I wasn't an asshole iron worker anymore. You know, we talked last night about the buttons with Superman and, you know, be a dick, don't be a dick. Which one am I going to push today? You know? I ended up out in Washington and lather, rinse, and repeat. I immediately found the Alano Club, walked in, hi, I'm new, I'm Rick, da, 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 and created a host of new friends. You know? We started going to retreats, not like this, different retreats where it was all AA based and speakers and conference type things, right? I got involved in the home group. I started hosting meetings, right? And started working with newcomers. We did spaghetti dinners. We did big birthday meetings. We did fundraisers for the club, right? Just like we do down here, you know? And, you know, a couple years later, 4 years in Minnesota, or I mean, Washington, and I get another opportunity. And these like from Colorado to Washington, I wasn't looking for a job. They called me. Hey, I saw your profile on LinkedIn. Would you like to come to Washington? I'm in Washington. Florida company calls me up. Me and my wife had always talked about coming back to Florida. We're going to come back to Florida. That's where we're going to retire. We're going to, you know, we're going to get back to Florida eventually. You know, the Colorado thing was to raise the child, get him out of South Florida. The Washington thing was good for the career. And we're going to come back to Florida. And then one day the phone rings. Hey, I see you do this thing. Would you like to come do it for us down here in Florida? I don't know. Let's talk. They fly me down and get done with the thing. I call the wife. Hey, guess what? We're going to move to Florida. She goes, how do you know? I said, they're going to offer me the job. I could tell. And they did, you know, and when God works in your life and things are popping and you're doing the right thing, it happens, right? They paid for the move. 100%. I packed a suitcase. They paid the movers to come in and take the dishes out of the kitchen. Put them in a box for me. Come back and put them in a different place in Florida. You know, I get back down here to Florida. I'm at the Tamarack Group, and I run into Dave M. Sub. And so we start talking, and he talks to me about the state convention. And he says, you know, it's just the guy that started this group, Gary, you know, is the chairman of the state convention this year. And I was like, oh, really? Gary and Don? He says, yeah, you know, let me see. I remember when they came in. So they really didn't start this group, but they were there at the beginning. But I remember when they walked in for their first meeting. It's like, get out. I'm like, yeah, I do. And then I run into Dave at the state convention, and he's sitting there, and he's talking to me and my wife. And he says, you know, I got this group of guys, West Side Ben's group. He says, do you smoke cigars? And I said, well, yes, I do, you know. And he said, well, you should come and check it out. You know, it's men's meeting, and it's, you know, it's pretty good. And, you know, you should come out. And he says, you know, you think he'd come out on a Thursday night? My wife looks at him and goes, you had him at cigar. You know, you had him at cigar. And I'm at the West Side Men's Group. It's my home group. Proud member of the West Side Men's Group. Nice. And I'm involved. You know, I've done a stint as the intergroup rep. I've done the Facebook thing. I help out with the other stuff that we've got going on. You know, I'm there probably 3 out of the 4 nights a month, because I do an on-call rotation, and especially now in the last 6-9 months, I haven't been able to do that on account of the fact that I really need to be like in front of my computer in case my phone rings. But you know what? It's all about dealing with life as it comes. You know, I spent 5, almost 6 months unemployed this year. Last year now? Jeez. Okay. Yeah. But you know what? It was all good. I got some friends that have a meeting on Monday night, and one of them suggested I go there, and the rest of the guys were gracious enough to allow me into that group. It's an off-book meeting, and it's a small, tight group of men that get extremely vulnerable and honest. And, you know, that's where the magic happens. One-on-one, helping each other get through this thing called life. Accepting life on life's terms, doing whatever it is that you need to do to stay sober today, one day at a time. This is so special. You know, this program works if you work it. You know, you can't do this thing alone. You can't mentally read the steps on the wall and get that stuff done. It doesn't work that way. You need to work with another man. You need to have a group of fellows that you can rely on so that when you can't call that other guy, you know, your one main contact, and he doesn't answer the phone, you got to have somebody else to call. You know, this thing works with God, the group, and fellowship for me in that order, right? I have my higher power. I have the group of drunks, which is also my God, the group. you know, and the fellowship that we get from hanging out with each other. And above all, the one thing that I've figured out is that I just need to do the next right thing and it will all work out. And I learned that all in here. Thank you.